My name is Monica Kelly, and there are few people like Pastor Ray Johnston. This man is a visionary. He is a leader among leaders. He is somebody who has pastored a church, started with just a few folks, and now there are over 20,000 people that attend Bayside on a regular basis. Pastor Ray has a huge heart. He's a good guy. Like, he's just a nice person, a kind person, and he just wants to share the gospel as far and wide as it can go. Pastor Ray, for people that don't know you, can you kind of give us a little bit of your background?
Oh, great. My name is Ray Johnston. I grew up in Southern California. I pastor a church called Bayside, but I never in a million years thought I'd be a pastor. I grew up in a executive, pretty high octane Southern California home. My dad was president of a company at age 40. My dad was an atheist. My mom was an agnostic. So I grew up being an atheist. Monica, I actually talked a guy out of becoming a Christian when I was 18 years old, which does not look good on a pastor's resume. And what happened is my dad ends up becoming an alcoholic and then became an alcoholic rageaholic. I mean, I had two younger sisters and it was crazy. My mom was an alcoholic too. And they drank their whole future apart, the entire home. I have two younger sisters. And it would get so crazy sometimes about midnight or 1 a.m, they would come running in my room crying. I'd take the screen off the window. I'd hop out the window and we'd be walking the streets in this nice neighborhood. But after it died down, I'd put them back through the window and they'd sleep in my room. And then they got divorced. Matter of fact, my dad was a big deal. Guys wanted to run him for governor of California. He turned them down and they ran a guy named Ronald Reagan instead.
So, wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. That was the family I grew up in. And then what happened is when I was 18, a friend of mine we're on the same basketball team. We just struck up a friendship and this guy started bringing me to his church. It's this large church in Southern California. And my first thought, to be honest with you, is these people are pretty sharp. How can such smart people believe such stupid stuff like the Bible? Monica, it took me about 6 or 8 months. And I finally woke up one day and I went, oh no, it's 51-49. I now believe more than I don't believe. And the minute that happened, I went, I'm in. So ended up by this great church, introduced me to Jesus, discipled me, reordered me in my entire life. And for anybody listening to this, what happened is my parents ended up getting divorced, which is no great surprise because every single person in my family tree going back 150 years now is divorced. Every single one. Grandparents, aunts, uncles, sisters, everybody. Carol and I celebrated our 42nd wedding anniversary this year.
That's incredible.
Which means we have the longest running marriage in the history of my family tree. And all to Jesus, the Bible, and a great church. And so I love it when somebody comes up and I just don't think Jesus makes that big of a difference. All I have to do is take up my family tree. He broke 150 years of past disaster patterns in one generation. Okay. We cut our family tree down and used it for kindling to build a whole new one. And so anybody listen to this, I really want to say to them, I'm kind of living proof that there is nothing in your background, nothing you've done or nothing that's ever been done to you that will stop God from doing something great in your future if you will let him in. So I'm living a life I never thought I'd live.
Tell me about Bayside. Like, how did all that get started?
Yeah, I did not want to be a pastor, but we were living in Granite Bay. There were two copycat suicides of teenagers in Granite Bay. And four people began to pray that God would raise up a church that would attract teenagers. And so they came to us and said, would you be the pastor? And I said, no. You know, it's a little bit like God says, here am I, send someone else. And so they bugged us for 6 months. Finally, I took the coward's way out. I said, look, I will help you start the church, but the minute we're up and rolling, you'll call a pastor, it will not be me. We did a Bible study and 26 people showed up. A month later, 28 people showed up. And I went, I don't think this church is going to happen. So we picked the name Bayside and we were, let's try a test service, see if anybody shows up. So we rented this tennis club, set up in the upstairs room, There's about 100 chairs set up. I take down 50 of them, so it'll look full when only 30 people show up. And 162 people showed up. And we're pretty simple, like the in and out of churches. We teach the Bible and worship. But at the end of that message, I thought, I don't think some of these people are Christians. So I gave a crystal clear invitation to receive Christ as your Savior and make him your Lord. And I just said, if you prayed that prayer, raise your hands. Half the hands in the room went up at the end of that service and said, hey, thanks for coming. We don't have a church. We'll just get in a month. So a month later, we went at a school down the street. I arrived. There's 180 chairs set up. And so I take down about 50 of them. So it'll look full when only 100 people come back. 226 people show up the second service. Same thing. Worship, teach the Bible, give an invitation, see if people become Christians. And we get up, we'll do this again in a month. But after that service, I went to a prayer summit in Chicago. It's the second night in this late night prayer meeting. And I've prayed in this thing. It's about 1,000 leaders from all over the world. I prayed out. I prayed for everything I could think of. And then they say, wait a second, I should pray for Bayside that God would give it the right pastor because it's not going to be me. And to be really honest, and this is embarrassing, I didn't want to be the pastor because I was afraid. I was afraid we'd try to start a church and nobody would come. I was afraid we'd try to start a church and people would come, but no help would come. I was afraid we'd try to start a church and people would come and help would come, but we'd have to raise money, buy land, build them all. I was afraid of everything. I never had the guts to tell people I was too afraid to do it. I just kept saying, God has not called his servant Ray to do this. I'm in this prayer meeting. It's at two services. It's 3 days later. I'm in this 11 o'clock at night prayer meeting in Chicago. And I start praying that God would raise up the right pastor for this church. Now, there's 1,000 people in this room. So I'm going, Lord, that person's got to be here. Light him up, levitate him. I'll go talk to him. And this has never happened to me before. While I'm praying, God crystal clear says to me, read Acts 18. And I open up my Bible and I look down and it says these words, Acts chapter 18. The Lord said to Paul in the night, which this is, by a vision, which this is starting to feel like. And the next words are, to not be afraid. And I went, oh no, I don't want to do this. I'm going to keep reading. There's got to be a loophole. Well, we had already planned our move back home to Marin County from Sacramento. The next verse says, Paul stayed where he was and taught the word of God. And I start crying. I walk out of the prayer meeting. I go up to my room and I call my wife, Carol, to find out if I've heard from God or not. And husbands will understand that one. And she started crying and she said, she'd already started a Bible study up here. The coach of the Sacramento Kings was coming. It was flourishing. And she started crying. She said, I knew God was telling us to do this. I just been praying for you that he would make it real obvious. Because if anything gets hard around here, you'll know it was the call of God. My wife's amazing. And that's how I ended up at Bayside. I did not want to do it. I was afraid to do it. It was a crystal clear, only time in my life call of God. Everything that's happened, I'm pretty much going, it's not me. I mean, I'm pastor at a church. I didn't want to start. It's like I just think God was going to do something, and he took a very unlikely person and threw him into it.
And indeed, your story is you're dragging your feet the whole time. You're like, find
That's right.
somebody else, God, anyone but me. And he
Yep.
made it clear. And to give people who are not familiar with Bayside, what has happened over the years? How many people do you serve now?
The first thing I want to say is this. I don't believe large churches are better or more spiritual than small churches. There are some small, great churches. I get to do a lot of stuff with leaders. We have a Thrive conference, and we'll have about 4,000 leaders here in about a week. They're great, and there are some large unhealthy churches. There's also some large healthy churches and some smaller. I think the thing is health, not size. What happened though is we rented a school. Even this is a God thing. We're like, we don't have a place to meet. The principal of Green Hills Elementary School phoned me and said, I'm the principal of the school. I've been praying for your new church. Would you like to use our building? This has been God's thing. It's God, not Rayside, man. This is it's and the and so what happened is we go into this place and we just do the same thing. We just worship and teach the Bible, and that service fills up. I watch a guy walk in, he can't find a seat. We had about 300 seats in there, couldn't find a seat. He walked out. So I got up at the end of that service and said, in 2 weeks, we're going to two services. We didn't have a church board yet, so you could get stuff done fast. And so we went to two services, that filled up. We went to three services, that filled up. We had an overflow room in the teacher's lounge, and that would fill up. And then after about a year, we went, God, you got to do something. And God asked Granite Bay build a brand new 34 or $50 million high school, whatever it was. We moved down there, and that explodes from there. And then, but it's interesting. We like that seeker church thing. That's not us. We pretty much went, there is a power unleashed if you will teach the Bible, actually live the way it says to live, treat people well, and just genuine worship. It's why I like K-Love. Positive, encouraging, but it's still a real deal. And so we move on to the Granite Bay campus and it exploded. And right now there are 10 campuses. We will have about 18,000 people this weekend. There will be about 60,000 people on Easter. It's crazy. Christmas Eve this year on the Granite Bay campus, we gave same thing. We got a Mark Clark, incredible communicator. He preached. We had close to 3,000 people not just accept Christ in the services, but go to follow-up tables to get material.
That's
I never
crazy.
dreamt this kind of stuff would happen. Yeah, and the thing is, I didn't actually want to do it, but it's pretty cool. The most fun part is this. Outreach Magazine, about 15 years ago, had Bayside Church, which is the fastest growing church in America. And the minute I saw the cover of that and we're on it, I'm going, oh no, we're going to get even more criticized. But what happened is the next year, I take about 16 pastors, go away for 3 day roundtables. I still do this a blast. You could put 16 pastors in a room and just talk life and God and ministry for 3 days. And the oldest guy there, the last day, I said, hey, would you do a devotional? And this guy, I just said about 10 minutes in the morning, and he goes, sure. I'm in the back of the room. All these other pastors are sitting up, and this guy teaches, and in 10 minutes, I'm a disaster. I mean, tears are streaming down my face because what and everything changed. What happened is this guy just got up, took Acts 2, and he said, here's how the early church lived. He says, quote, selling their possessions and goods they gave to anyone who had needs. And he just went this little board and he wrote, and he said, evidently the early church started with good deeds. He goes, watch this. 2 verses later, it says they had favor with God and all the people. I mean, the Christian church in America does not have favor with people. And he said, evidently their good deeds led to goodwill. And the very next verse says, and the Lord added to the number daily those who were being saved. And he wrote good news. And I'm a wreck. I'm crying because I'm going, the early church, their good deeds led to goodwill, which led to opus the good news. And I realize we look like a success because our church is fast growing and large. And I'm a complete failure because we're not doing it that way. Like almost every church in America, we'd been trying to deliver the good news without good deeds, so there was no goodwill. And I mean, it just wrecked me. And so I called our staff together and I said, I don't care if it wrecks our church, destroys our church, we will do this God's way. And it changed everything. We'd done capital campaigns, gave all the money to us. Like, we just finished a campaign. We have 85 projects and we raised $8.3 million to give away to 85 projects here, there, and all around the world. For example, when COVID shut the world down, remember that? We get a phone call, and downtown, somebody called and they said, hey, there's 300 kids downtown, and those 300 kids are locked out of school because they're poor and they're from really bad, poverty-stricken areas, and they don't have Chromebooks and they don't have Wi-Fi in their homes. So we call a Zoom call, had a gazillion people go on Zoom. Told them, get out your phone. People gave $250,000 in 12 minutes. And within 3 days, we worked with the people and they got these downtown amazing people. We got all those kids' Chromebooks, got all their families' Wi-Fi hotspots and prepaid them for 2 years. And they were all back in school. We would not have done that before Acts 2. The other one is this, the Galleria Mall near us. Terrorists firebombed about a decade ago, burned about a fourth of the mall. Well, before we're going, that's too bad. Acts 2, you go, what do they need? So we called the mall in the city of Roseville and Rockland and said, who's going to be hurt? And they said, well, not the stores, not the full-time people. They all have insurance or whatever. He said, but these day laborers, many of them from Mexico, a lot of them don't speak English. They have no safety net. Their kids are, they have no source of anything. So I got up in church that week, and I described that. I said, we're going to take a second offering and we're not keeping a dime of this. And whatever you give, we are going to keep these people. And our people gave a little over, I think they gave $145,000 in a second offering. We met with the mall in the city of Roosevelt, locker room, and for about 18 months until the mall was rebuilt, we kept all those people. We kept them in their homes, kept their lights on, heat on, got their kids, kept their kids at school, got them backpacks and school supplies, all that kind of stuff for a year and a half. And then they reopened the mall and they hired them all back. So they were all safe and got through that. Well, what happened is this: that year the mall called Bayside and said, hey, we'd like to partner. We have an ice rink during Christmas. Would you guys like to host the ice rink and sponsor it? We're like, absolutely. So we have extra store during Nordstrom's that's empty right now. Would you like to use it for something during the Christmas season? We said, absolutely. So our children's ministry went in there and we did a drop and shop. Moms and dads, drop your kids off and shop for 3 hours without them. Then our children's ministry just ran a little day camp for free. We set up a free gift wrapping station, which we still do every year. Well, what happened is the Sacramento Atheist Organization found out that the mall was partnering with Bayside and they called the mall to protest. And the mall said, look, when we were firebombed, we never heard from you guys. This church cared about our people. So if you're going to protest, go ahead. We're sticking with the church because they're the people that cared. And I went, the way that God worked in the Bible is evidently still the way good deeds still lead to goodwill, which opens up the good news. Can you imagine if all 360,000 churches in America, that became the new operating system? However, until God put me in a room where an older pastor got his Bible and hit me across the head with it, it wrecked me, but it changed our church. And so I don't think we care about being the fastest. I don't care about any of that stuff anymore. We're pretty much going, we will just keep trying to model Acts chapter 2 and try to live that out. That's us. We're just
Okay.
as screwed up as every other church, but we're trying to get that part of it right.
First of all, I love that story and how God will go to any lengths. That there's a reason you told that story. There's a reason I heard it, because I happened to be a couple of weeks ago down in San Quintin, and I know you canceled the Mexicali trip. I'm down there with New Life and You Reach. John Valensky was down there for a couple of days. He literally shared the same thing. And I was so moved by that. And I was thinking, we need to partner with you in some way on a regular basis, because what God is doing, and I'm really clear that it's God, and thank you for being so humble to receive that message from that older pastor, because it changes everything.
I'm not sure if it's humble. I think it was God pretty much dropping an atomic bomb on me. I mean, I was a mess. And the very same year, everybody thinks your church is a raving success. You discover that according to scripture, you're a raving failure and you've got to get this right. So.
What's amazing too is the model that you have is such a blueprint for the church in America, because you're right. We're in a place now, especially the last couple of years, where things have happened in the body of Christ that have made the church not look so good, right? And when you're as big as Bayside, it's easy to see the brand everywhere. It's very similar to Caleb, where people can think, you know, you're so big, you're just taking over everything, when in fact, that's not the case at all.
Oh, by the way, you're absolutely right. By the way, can I say something to folks, everybody who loves Caleb and listens to it? If I could pass you off for a second, my life also changed with a conversation with my daughter, Leslie. We have two boys, thought we were done. Surprise, identical twin daughters. They're awesome. And my daughter, Leslie, came home from school one day and she said, they told me I have to write a paper on a leader. I picked you. They know who you are. So they said it was okay. And then she said, I have 20 questions. You have to answer them all honestly. Well, I'm going, I don't really want to do that. So I thought I'm going to end up in hot water. So we just went to jacuzzi. So I was going to be in hot water the whole time. And it was awesome. We talked for 2 hours. Her last question is the most important question in life. She looked at me and said, what's the most important thing you do as a leader? And I looked at her and I said, that's easy. Anybody listen to this, I'd say, what's the most important thing you do as a leader, as a Christian, as a husband or a wife, as a mom or a dad, as a teenager? What's the most important thing you do? And I looked at her and I got choked up and I said, by far, the most important thing I or anyone does is this: make sure I stay encouraged. Because if I'm not encouraged, I'm going to be discouraged. And discouragement precedes destruction. Discouragement is the quicksand people get into. No young guy's ever come up to me and said, I'm so encouraged about my marriage, I'm getting a divorce. Nobody's ever said, I'm so encouraged about school, I'm dropping out. We have a definition of discouragement. Discouragement is the anesthetic that the devil uses on a person just before he reaches in, carves out their heart, and wrecks the rest of their life, which means the single most important thing about a person is to figure out what drains me, what discourages me, and do less of that. And what is it that encourages me? And I'm sure, like all ministries, Caleb probably gets flack from time to time. I would just say, whatever you're doing, keep it up, because you all made a decision decades ago. We will be positive and encouraging, which is what everybody's starving for these days. Caleb, way to go and keep it up.
What do you do to stay encouraged?
First of all, I avoid things that are discouraging. Like there are some, you probably have them. Everybody listening has this. There are some people, they are so discouraging. If you're with them, you walk out worse, which means you just have to spend less time with them. There are other people that are so encouraging. You have to, like, I'm better. I love going to worship. Okay. Matter of fact, lots of times we have a lot of people preach at our church. One of my favorite things to do is to sit there and take, we have a guy named Mark Clark. So good. I went to two services the same week and just sat there. Anything that recharges my batteries. The other thing I'd say is this. I'm doing this at a leadership conference in 2 days. All human beings have two levels. You have a challenge level and you have a support level. You have two levels and those things interact. When your challenge level goes up and your support level doesn't go up or it drops, the distance between your level of challenge and your level of support is destructive stress. And destructive stress causes every emotional problem. In other words, stress is, if that gap gets too wide, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, all affairs on the part of men are not because they're in love, it's inappropriate stress relief, which means, and the problem is this, most of us, when COVID blew up and the whole world went crazy, what happened is this, people's challenges went sky high and the support level dropped and Americans tried to lower their challenges by quitting their jobs. Okay. For 9 straight months, more Americans resigned than ever before their jobs, only to wake up and discover they had a new set of challenges called unemployment. Every person needs to figure out, how do I raise my level of support? And so who is it that supports you? Spend more time with them. Okay. Get in a group, whatever it takes. What is it that drains you and discourages you, and do less of it? I always walk out of church better than I walk in. Like, don't miss church. Americans right now are going to church 3 out of every 8 weeks. And people are going, well, I just sit at home and listen to it. The Christian faith is more than the consumption of content. Okay. I mean, it is being in the presence of God with the people of God, worshiping a living God. It's being transformed by that. It is hearing the word of God in a compelling way. And don't get me started on that. But I think the average person, COVID raised their level of challenge and dropped their level of support. And which means figure out what is it that supports you and raise that thing. Okay. I'm in a group of guys. Matter of fact, I go away every 6 months. I go away with a group of guys. We're away about 4 to 5 days. I walk out better. One of my best friends, a guy named Bernie. If I'm bummed out about something or whatever, I just go find that guy. We go on about a 2-hour walk. We hang out and goof off. I'm good for another 3 weeks.
That's incredible. That's great.
Yeah. So there's people, counselors sometimes raise your level of support. But the closer those things get together, that's emotional health. It's relational health. And so it's really individual, because there are some things that encourage people that don't encourage other people. So you got to figure out, what is it that raises your level of support and spend more time doing it.
So you've got a lot of initiatives coming up. Tell me about some of the ideas that you have for the greater Sacramento area as far as pastors on campus, expanding campuses.
Yeah, we have 10 campuses in this area. However, my read is we have a lot of churches in this community with a lot of great people and a lot of great pastors. My read is, if instead of launching a ton of churches, if we can help every church get better and they can help us get better, then everything gets better. And so, for example, we raise money and we're giving it to different churches to do different projects. Okay. There's a great church down the street from us. It's a large Russian-Ukrainian church, and it's moving beyond just that limitations. It's called House of Bread. They're amazing. Okay. We do a ton of stuff with their pastors. And so, for example, I'm talking to one of their pastors, and they said, we do stuff in the Ukraine, which is still that whole war is breaking out. People are dying. Bombs are dropping. And these people courageously fly over there. And they plant churches while bombs are dropping. These people are heroes. So I said, what are you guys working on now? And they said, we keep meeting these teenagers over there whose dads have been killed on the front line. They're a mess. Bombs are dropping. Their emotional health is gone. So we said, what are you going to try to do? And this church is awesome. They said, we would like to fly 30, 40 of those teenagers over here, have them be in our church, help them experience America, all this stuff, and see if we can restore some emotional health to these kids, maybe meet them, lead them to Jesus, and make them part of our church. We'll find a place to live. And I said, well, what's stopping you? And they said, well, money. And so we said, well, what does it cost to fly them over here? Take care of them. What does it cost? And we figured out what that was. And I looked at the pastor and I said, by the way, these pastors are great guys. I looked at this guy named Vlad and I looked him in the eye and said, we got that. On Christmas Eve, we stood up. And we said, we're taking a second offering right now, just at the Granite Bay campus. We had 14 services. Told the story of that. And I said, not only are we going to fly all those kids over here, but we would like you to give enough money so we can buy them a 3-day park hopper pass to Disneyland.
Oh my gosh.
They just need to enjoy some stuff and they'll be here later this year. It all happened on Christmas Eve. So instead of just coming and singing Christmas carols and going home, every year we have causes on Christmas Eve and we have causes on Easter, and there are things like that. A few years ago, we were part of there's a great ministry, and they rescue trafficked girls in Cambodia. And this heroic guy went from the Venture Church over there and started rescuing girls. In a couple of these towns, almost every girl's trafficked. Some as young as 4 years old. Crazy. Some of them used or abused 7 times a night. So what happened is we hear this stuff, and he said the general over all sex trafficking called me. The general said, "Hey, I like what you're doing." He goes, "Problem is this, the cops here are so corrupt." He goes, "Every time we do a raid, all the pimps are gone, all the girls are gone." And he said, "What do you want to try to do?" He said, "I want to launch a SWAT team of some Cambodians I trust and some Westerners you trust." He said, "And we will make some real raids and arrests." So I said, "Well, what do you need?" He said, "I need $250,000 is what this general says it'll cost. They have no money in Cambodia." The general said, "Do you know anywhere we get $250,000 and start a SWAT team?" And he said, "Yeah, let me call Ray at Bayside."
Oh
So he calls
gosh.
me and he goes, "Well, the problem is I had just raised a bunch of money for stuff we gave away." And I actually told him this. I said, "Man, I'm just a little afraid to talk about money in my church right now." He goes, "That's okay. God will provide." I hang up the phone. I don't know if you've ever had God on your back, but I call all of our pastors 2 days later. I tell them about it. And our pastors are all going, "What kind of cold-hearted jerk could ever say no to that?" That's me. So I went, Christmas Eve's coming up. So we told that story on Christmas Eve. We told them we needed to raise $250,000. Well, we didn't raise $250,000. People gave $400,000. We didn't keep a dime of it. We sent it all over there. They started a SWAT team, trained everybody, and started doing raids. It's a few years later now. They've rescued almost 2,000 girls. And even better than that, over 100 really bad guys are in prison where they can never again hurt young girls. And remember when I said, I told the guy, I said, "I'm a little afraid to talk about money right now because I just did." The whole thing almost didn't happen because of me.
That's
Fear
incredible.
is the dark room where negatives develop. Never let your fears stop you from living fully into your future. And the minute fear got erased and we said, okay, we're going after this anyway, some pretty cool things happened. Example of good deeds, goodwill, and the world changes over there for a couple thousand girls.
And generations to come. That's incredible.
Oh, absolutely. And it sure beats just come, sing, worship, take notes on a Bible message, and go home.
Right, which is what people stay at home for. So you are
That's right.
literally changing the world. Well, I could talk to you forever. Thank you so much. What is the website where people can find your church?
BaysideOnline.com. Or they can also look this up. We do a yearly conference called Thrive. It's always in May. Matter of fact, it's in a week. So if anyone wants to fly in, get here quick. It's sold out, but we will get you in somehow. And it's a blast. It is. We actually unleash. There are 87 seminars on life, scripture, leadership, all that kind of stuff. But then there's world-class communicators coming in. And then we also fly comedians in because most Christians these days have forgotten how to laugh.
Right, we need to laugh. Thank you.
Hey, it's really not, by the way, you are really good at this.
Well, thank you very much.
Oh, and you're married?
I am married. My husband's name is Jeff. My son's name is Joshua.
What does Jeff do?
Jeff's in construction.
Oh, so you actually married a guy with skills. My
Yes.
wife did.
Yeah.
So that's cool. What kind of stuff does he do?
He does remodels. He built our house. He does everything. Very talented.
Oh, gotta love that. That's
Yeah.
cool.
Yeah.
So that is good. Hey, great being with you. I need to run into a my daughter runs Thrive.
Oh,
She's
yeah.
amazing.
Okay.
But she makes me go to meetings.
Okay. Have a
So
great
hey,
day.
we'll see you at Thrive.
Okay. Bye.
God bless. Have a great day.